Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
And I see the name Alex Guerrero. Yes, that Alex Guerrero. Not just, and he's trending, right? He's trending. Not just in the city of Boston, not just in New England, but in the entire United States. You know, Twitter breaks that up. You can see it by city, you can see it by region, you can see it by state. This guy was trending nationally. Alex Guerrero, you know, the dude with the massage table and the body oils, the one with the so-called questionable medical background, but the unquestionable backing of his quarterback, Tom Brady. So that guy's trending, and I'm wondering, why is he trending? Did he die? Did he get arrested? Did he come up with a new use for those multicolored stretch pants that people always look awkward as hell using at the gym? Why would this guy be trending? Well, not because of anything he did. Turns out he didn't do anything at all. Tommy did. Because TB12 was standing up for his man once again. Brady was doing his paid weekly spot for radio station WEEI in Boston. And it was your standard Brady interview, meaning nothing interesting was flowing from TB12's gap. But after talking about week three of the preseason, the team's revolving door wide receiver, the talk finally turns to Tom's body man and business partner. And that's where things got extremely awkward.
He had said in his opinion that all this stuff had been overblown, that he and Belichick actually had a pretty good relationship even then. Would you say that was true?
I said I don't want to get into it.
Okay. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows it's well documented how, you know, the work that he and I do together.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out, because I saw the reports this weekend that he's traveling with the team. Was he on the sideline on Friday?
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great day. I'll talk to you later.
So, really, nothing salacious there, nothing out of line. Just a question about whether or not Alex G was allowed back on aircraft. Some dead air. And then a follow-up question about whether or not Guerrero was allowed back on the sideline. I mean, not exactly Danny Caffey hammering Colonel Jessup and demanding to know whether or not he had ordered the code red on Santiago. Fact is, Pats fan, I know what your response is going to be, that you don't give a damn about Guerrero, that it's not even a story. You may not think it's a story, but the fact is, it is. It is a story. It's a story because Brady and Belichick reportedly were not on the same page last season, and probably are not on the same page right now. And part of the reason for that is Belichick obviously does not like Guerrero, does not want him around. And that's a problem for Brady, since they're business partners, and Brady in large credits Guerrero for a chunk of his success. So it is a story, and those questions weren't unfair. And on top of that, Brady had to know they were coming and should have had a much better plan in place when they did. Because it's really not that hard. Not nearly as hard as Tom Brady is making it. Answer a couple of questions about Guerrero, keep moving, and then it is a non-story. Instead, he gets all butthurt when it gets brought up, when he had to know that it was going to be brought up, and then he just pulls the ripcord and he bounces. It's a bad play. That's a bad play. Hanging up during an interview is almost always a very bad look. And now that non-story is actually a story, and it's because of the way Brady handled it. This is one of those cases where it's not the guys asking the questions. It's the guy who will not answer the questions. And the only reason we're talking about this right now is because Brady would not talk about it then. Brady is the one who took a non-story and made it a story, just like he does whenever something comes up that he doesn't want to talk about. Because this is not the first time this guy's done that. Tom, if you want people to stop talking about Guerrero, do what you do with essentially every other interview question. Roll out some nothing answer and then just keep moving. Don't freak out. Don't bail. And by the way, you really can't sell your cookbook, your performance PJs, and the TB12 method while telling everybody that your guy Alex is changing the entire world and then refuse to answer questions about the guy that you're jamming down our throats. It just doesn't work that way. You know, and then you've got Belichick. You know, Belichick couldn't have been happy about that. The fact that they had to come together and meet somewhere in the middle. Like all of a sudden now, Guerrero's allowed back on the sideline, Guerrero's back on the airplane. When asked about that, Belichick probably would have at least given you something, like, Tom. How do you think that conversation must have gone between Belichick and Brady? Hey, Tom, sorry I didn't name you Patriot of the Week even once last year. Hey, you can tell Alex that he can set up that mobile massage table at the loading dock if you want. And while we're at it, hey, can you and me be friends on FaceChat?
Snapface.
How about Snapface? That'd be kind of fun for you and me on Friday nights to do Snapface together, right?
Instant chat.
You know how big of a stuff that must have been for the hood? When was the last time you saw the hood kiss and make up with anybody who was not his daughter? However, going back to Brady, you want to talk about an unforced error. Because of Brady, now you can't not talk about this. Now it's actually a story, but because Brady made it a story. Once again, Tom, do what you always do. Give some nothing answer and keep moving, and it's not a story. But by hanging up in the middle of the interview with some pretty innocuous questions, you're the one that made it a story, not the guys asking the questions. Not this time. 1-800-636-8686. My favorite thing to do is to pick up my phone and play Snapface. Snapface is a great game. Julius Thomas. Julius, good morning. Really nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So you announced that retirement on Friday with a really thoughtful piece in the Players Tribune, which I want to get to in a moment. But first, I've got to ask, how have the first few days of retirement been for you?
It's been kind of new, especially since I started school last week. But you get so used to having such a structured day. So many people always letting you know, this is where you have to be. This is how you have to do it. So now being able to kind of have the ability to make those decisions for myself and go about getting used to being a little bit more independent. So it's definitely something to get it's new, but I'm getting used to it.
Julius Thomas joining us, and I'm going to mention and talk to you about going to school in a minute. But you opened up that piece by writing about your relationship to football. As most people know, you were a Division I basketball player, and you had the potential to pursue a career overseas that would have most likely been safer than playing football. So what was it about football that attracted you?
I just had this feeling, sitting in stands in college watching the games that was something that I could be good at. I really enjoyed catching a football. I mean, that was just something that was just one of my favorite athletic things to do in life. And I told myself that I would always regret it if I never gave myself opportunity to see if I could do it. It'd be one of those things where you're sitting on the couch with your friends saying, oh, man, I think that I would have been able to do that. And I said, I really got to give it a shot. And I had an amazing opportunity with a redshirt year left. And I said, man, it's something I have to go for. So, I went out there to the spring practice and figured I'd give it a couple months.
Julius Thomas, my guest. So you knew deep down you could do it, but when you look back as to where you were as a football player when you were drafted by Denver in terms of knowledge of the game and how to play the game, what kind of thoughts do you have? I mean, for instance, how much did you know about the game at that time?
Yeah, it's crazy looking at just the amount of growth that I've had in the game of football. When I first started playing, I didn't know much about anything. I mean, everything had to be explained to me, not just the play, but the why of the play. I didn't understand the gaps. I didn't understand leverage, just some of the basic ways of communicating that a lot of people just assume that I had were all brand new for me. So I had to learn defenses. I had to learn fronts. It was definitely a big learning curve for me.
Yeah, so not only all that, but, of course, the NFL. If you're an NFL player, that's an all-consuming job. You also describe how you had to pour everything you had into it, including a lot of your own identity. How do you mean that, and what kind of an impact did that have on you?
Well, I think that, when you're trying to play catch-up, I was so many years behind. And NFL practice field is probably one of the toughest places you can be if you're really trying to grow and learn. I mean, you're lining up against Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware. I mean, these guys aren't out there just to see you get better. They're going to help, but they're definitely out there the highest, players at their level in the game. So it's tough. And I really had to get into that mode. I think that sometimes in order to be, the best at something, it requires that laser focus, that focus on nothing but the goal. But, on the back end of focusing on nothing but the goal, you have so many other parts of your life that you haven't been able to pour your attention to. And it's sometimes tough to really keep that balance.
Clones, it is here. The three-day weekend right at the end of this work week. Make sure you're ready to dominate with a Masterbuilt. Craft your masterpiece and enjoy a slow smoke meal with a Masterbuilt smoker. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned professional, you'll find that just right smoker for your backyard cookout. It's easier and it tastes better than grilling. Load the smoker up with your favorite foods, set the time and temp, and walk away. Spend more time with your family and friends. It's available at Home Depot, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. For more information, tips, and recipes, visit masterbuilt.com. Obviously, you love the game. You're immersed in the game, but you write that you recently started to check in with yourself and you started to take stock of your own life. How did that process start, and then what did you discover once you started doing that?
You know, I think the biggest way it started was when I finally had everything that I wanted. You know, I got the big contract, got the house, the cars, you know, I realized that I finally had, you know, I guess what we all start working for when we're a kid, you know, just to be able to have the financial security to do kind of what you want in life. And when I had it, I realized that, you know, I wasn't necessarily the happiest I'd ever been in my life. And I think that we sometimes kind of believe that there's a correlation between a lot of money and happiness. And it comes back down to the, you know, money is not going to just alleviate all your problems. And then not that I was in a crazy state and, you know, struggling too much mentally, but I really realized that I had to focus on this, and it's something I was aware of if I wanted to continue to have, you know, my version of a happy life. And I started to really take stock of who I was and kind of look at my past traumas, the things that I've been going through in life, and I really wanted to work on that. So I kind of started my own self-therapy just through reading books and trying to get wisdom in different ways of, you know, really trying to have a fulfilling life with meaning as well as the successes that you have in life.
Joyce Thomas is my guest. And as part of that, you actually took a real interest in how the mind works. And you ran down a list of who's who in terms of authors that you've read and you've studied. Who are some of the thinkers that have resonated the most with you?
You know, I think what originally started me down the path into psychology was I've always been really fascinated with human behavior. And I think that a lot of it started for me with Socrates. You know, you know, he had such interest in life, you know, to always constantly be kind of probing people to see their reasoning behind the things they did and see if they really understood their why. And, you know, so for me, the why is such a big thing in everything that I do. And, you know, from philosophy, I kind of moved into sociology with Brené Brown and really understanding what allows us to go ahead and live fulfilling lives. And then going through all that, and I've also been very big in my religious studies. So it's kind of always that existential thoughts out there that we have, and we're trying to figure out, you know, why are we here and what are we meant to do? Like everybody else, I'm the same way. And all that kind of led me in a roundabout way towards the field of psychology, which is really just the study of human behavior.
All right, so this led you to the field of psychology. If I'd said to you, Joyce, 10 years ago, if I'd said to you, let's talk psychology, what are your thoughts on psychology generally? What would your reaction have been 10 years ago?
I mean, I think it would have been probably a lot like I'm sure a lot of people's are out there, is that there's nothing that somebody can tell me about myself or help me to understand about who I am, much less do I want to have that experience. And I would have thought that there wasn't any need in it. There was no reason for me to spend my time talking to somebody about how I can grow, the different ways that my mind works, you know, how I process information, all that stuff. It was just nothing that I would have ever wanted to be a part of.
In other words, it was a waste of time. So how did you go from thinking that psychology was a waste of time to wanting a doctorate in it?
Well, and then I started getting out into the real world and seeing people. And I think that, you know, so many experiences I had just being around teammates, you know, here you got a bunch of guys between age 21 and their early 30s. You know, they're all wealthy guys. They all have a lot going for them. And then you start to see that, you know, there's these other things that are bothering people. You know, their relationships with your family, the relationships, you know, with your agent, girlfriend, child, wife. And all these things matter, and all these things are affecting each individual person I come into contact with. And then I start seeing, as people, you know, slowly start to open up more and more, that there's a lot going on beneath the surface. And we all have these masks that sometimes that we live behind that we don't necessarily have to. And then I really started to have a lot of compassion for what people were going through. And I thought, man, this would be great for me to take one of my passions, which is learning, and use this to help.
We're talking to Julius Thomas. You know, the other component in football, of course, is CTE. I'm curious, what kind of thoughts do you have about CTE, and how might that play a role in what you'd like to work on in the future?
You know, I think that CTE is it's a huge concern right now for athletes, especially football players. I think that it's kind of been a natural direction for me. You know, as I was speaking to psychologists and learning more about the field of psychology, one question they kept wanting to know is, what are your concerns with CTE? How often are you talking about CTE? Like, is this a big deal for you guys? And, you know, my initial response is, I don't know much about it. We rarely talk about it. And I started to see just how much information and studies are being done. And I thought, you know, I kind of have a sense of responsibility to study brain injuries, since you know, the career that I've had and the career that I want to go into, it kind of married, and I've really been looking forward to it.
You know, the other thing is too, before I let you go, for a lot of athletes, life after their sport can be really scary because, among other things, there is that loss of identity. You've obviously been thinking about a lot about your identity and how it's connected to your job as a football player. Are you comfortable letting that part of it go?
Yeah, I think that you know, you can talk to a bunch of mindfulness experts and they'll tell you that, you know, your peace is on the other side of stepping out of your ego. But, you know, that's for another day. But for me, I always understood that it's not about what I'm currently doing. It's about my character, who I am, what's important to me. That's who I really, really am inside. And, you know, what I'm doing in the moment, it's great. It's fun. It's how we experience life through work. But I'm okay with just being Julius Thomas as a person. You know, I don't have to be known as one of the best tight ends in the NFL or an NFL athlete or a great athlete at all. I can just be that guy that's sitting next to you at the airport having a good conversation. And, you know, being able to really be okay living that way, it gives me a lot of freedom. And, you know, I want to encourage more athletes to really understand that you're so much outside of what you have done your entire life, and to be able to connect with that so that when your days are over, because no athlete plays forever, you're able to still have a meaningful quality of life.
What a great conversation. A two-time Pro Bowler, the 129th pick overall in 2011, and he announced his retirement on Friday, wrote a really, really good piece for the Players Tribune. Joy, it's so great to get caught up. Congrats on a great career, and I really appreciate your time and your perspective. That was great. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Labor Day parties can sometimes involve alcohol. If yours does, make sure you secure a safe ride home. Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet also. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If someone you know has been drinking, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing is for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. It's late August. Khalil Mack, his contract situation with the Raiders is still a thing. You know what I can't figure out? Why it's late August and Khalil Mack's contract situation with the Raiders is still a thing. I don't get this at all. I can't follow this at all. In the last 3 years, this guy's been to 3 Pro Bowls. He was the Defensive Player of the Year. He is a team captain. He is your classic Oakland Raider. And he's got the potential to be even better than he already is. And he's one of the best in the game, if not the best. This guy's done everything you could possibly want from him and more. So, pay the man. Give him what he wants. And yet, for some reason, they're not. For some reason, according to PFT, he has not received any offers from the team since February. So not only are they not giving him what he wants, or maybe what he's worth, they haven't even made an offer to him since February, according to PFT. And even more insane than that, and that's crazy to me, but even more insane than that, PFT also reports that, quote, per a source with knowledge of the situation, the Raiders haven't slammed the door on the possibility of trading Khalil Mack. And then even worse, and to make it even more crazy, that was then chased by a tweet by a radio host in Detroit that read, quote, just heard from a Metro Detroit limo driver that he just picked up Raiders linebacker Khalil Mack, and he's going to meet with Lions GM Bob Quinn Monday. Stay tuned. Oh, all right. Sure. Maybe that, quote, Metro Detroit limo driver has got an inside scoop that nobody else has. Maybe. But if I'm a Raider fan, I'm hoping limo driver, Metro Detroit limo driver, just made that whole thing up. I mean, if this is the case, if this is a fact, and it might be, Mark Davis might want to start applying for Metro Detroit limo driver gigs, because I can't imagine that guy's going to be all that welcome in Oakland. He's already leaving Oakland, and now you've got the gold standard in Mack. Mack wants to be there. Mack's made no secret in the past that he wants to be a Raider for life. He is built in the mold of the silver and black legends. He is exactly what you want in a Raider linebacker. He's the stability that you want in your franchise. Derek Carr on offense, Khalil Mack on defense. It's that easy. Most teams would kill to have either one of these guys, and the Raiders have both of these guys. And I'm not talking about a good player. I'm not talking about a great player. I'm talking about a Hall of Fame player, a Hall of Famer. You don't play chicken with your Hall of Famers when it comes to contract negotiations. And even more than that, you're going to let stories get out that you'd be willing to trade him. Man, you better be willing to trade him if you're going to speculate that you might be willing to trade him. And by the way, for who? For what? No, I mean, literally, for who? For what? Seriously, who or what could you get in return that would be better than Khalil Mack? How do you win that trade? How do you sell that trade to your fans? How do you sell that trade to your locker room? And how do you win that trade? Again, for who? For what? And I mean that literally. For who? Who are you going to trade that guy for? Antonio Brown? Le'Veon Bell? Unless you do that, you're not going to win that trade. There's not a trade to be made that involves Khalil Mack at 27 that makes any sense. Yes, I know the argument that you'll have a lot of money tied up in him because he'll want a lot of money. But the reason he wants a lot of money is because he's worth a lot of money. I also know the 2019 draft is expected to produce a lot of pass rushers. So maybe you try to convince yourself that you can trade him, free up space, and replace him in the draft. But do you really think that you can get the next Khalil Mack in the draft? You better be 100% certain of that too, because you 100% have the actual Khalil Mack right now. So not only would I not trade him, I wouldn't even let the notion get out there that I'd consider trading him, especially when you're on the verge of moving your team from Oakland to Las Vegas and you've got a fan base that's already bent by that move. So what are you going to do? You're going to trade one of your most popular players? You're going to trade one of their favorite players? You're going to trade your best player? Again, for who? For what? Easy for me to say, it's not my money. However, Vegas just gave this guy a hell of a lot of money. Easy for me to say it's not my money, but I'd back up the Brinks truck for this guy, hand him a blank check, let him sign it, and ask him to fill it out any way he wants. Don't make this any more complicated than it already is. Why would you blow this over a few bucks? I mean, I know Marky D rolls around in a minivan, and he breaks bread at P.F. Chang's, and it's a baller lifestyle. I respect it. However, maybe you tighten the financial belt just a little bit. Rein in the spending just a little bit. Instead of throwing down all that crazy jack on your haircuts, maybe you cut your own hair for a few months. Just so you can make sure that you have to scratch or you have the scratch to sign Mac. Maybe you stop upgrading to a new flip phone every time they come out. Man, save your money. This is way too good of a thing to ruin. It's way too easy. Khalil Mack is part of the new Raiders. Blowing it and trading him would be so old Raiders. You're on the right track. Why are you screwing this up? This is a no-brainer. Get it done. Get it done. No contract offers since February? The Monday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Simple Contacts. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's info and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day and do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. It is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, we are offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter code Rome at checkout. Once again, $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter Rome at checkout. We are joined by PJ Fleck. And PJ, I've got to start the interview with the same question I always do. How are you doing?
I'm doing elite, man. Thanks for having us back on the show.
I knew it. All right, so you made the point in the past, in the first year in a program, what that is what you call year zero. Second year is actually, quote, year one. What do you mean by that, and how different does it feel to be entering year one as opposed to year zero at this time last year?
Well, the way I look at it is the first year you get there, everybody's learning something. You know, the year one word is learn. Everybody is. And nobody's mastered anything. Everything they're doing year one is for the first time, right? So nobody gets a chance to master anything. No player gets a chance to really lead that particular event because they haven't done it before. When you get to year two, most of the guys have mastered how you do things, whether it's the systems, offense, defense, special teams, whether it's how you do things, whether it's the way you work out or whether the way you run spring ball or how you practice. And now they can start giving that to other players. So our first year, I always call the dig, and you just keep digging until you get the right people in the program. And at times, the people that might not fit you out of the program. And then when you get to year two, which is actually what I call the year one, that's when you start pouring the concrete foundation of a program. And that's what we feel like we're doing right now with 53% of our team being freshmen.
PJ Fleck joining us once again. All right, so what do you know about your players in your program that maybe you did not know when you first arrived?
Well, I know that they love football. And one thing I know I'm learning about our whole football team, especially the guys we're recruiting, are they love their life. Academically, athletically, socially, and spiritually. You know, this is a very holistic program, a holistic culture that wants you to become elite in every aspect of your life. And it's a proactive program. You know, part of our job as a head football coach is to be able to protect our players, not after something happens, but protect them by the education they're getting proactively so they can go out there and be a tremendous asset to society and their state and their university and the people they're going to come associated with every single day.
Minnesota head football coach PJ Fleck joins us once again in the jungle. You know, in your second year at Western Michigan, the program took that enormous leap. Do you see signs in your program in Minnesota that give you an indication that this group is ready to take a leap as well?
Well, I think we're going to take a leap. However big a leap that is, we'll see. I think my second year at Western Michigan, we started 1-3, 1-4. And then all of a sudden it clicked. We were down 20-some points at halftime against Ball State, and we went on a 7-game winning streak. At some point, it's going to click for this group. I just don't know at what point that will be. That could be game one. That could be game 12. It just, we don't know. There's 53% of our team that are freshmen, which is the most in the country. We're one of, if not the youngest team in America, and we're starting a true freshman quarterback. We've got freshmen at wide receiver. We've got everybody that's really young, but they're very, very talented freshmen. So The good thing about young people at times, they don't know how good they are, don't know how bad they are, they just go out there and play. So we're looking forward to that for sure.
All right, so before I talk to you about that quarterback situation, as any Gophers fan will tell you, it's been 51 years since the team won a Big Ten title. I know you've heard that a ton, and when it gets talked about, it almost seems to create a certain level of expectation that maybe this is not a place where you can win conference titles. How have you gone about addressing that attitude?
Well, first and foremost, we got to change people's perspectives, ideas, and thoughts. We got to quit making excuses. When I came here, I was told why we can't do this. We're in a pro town. We have the city of Minneapolis. We have the Twin Cities. We have X, Y, and Z. Those are all the reasons why we can. And that's why we took the job. You know, I tend to take some jobs that haven't done things in a long, long time. And that's what we're doing here at the University of Minnesota. You know, Western Michigan hadn't won a title since 1988. They had never won a bowl game. And in a few years, you know, we took them to a New Year's Six Bowl, won a championship, won bowl games, and are hopefully going to do that here as well. But we've got to change people's minds, perspectives, thoughts, ideas. And it's not just the recruits and the players. It's the people. It's their parents. It's their grandparents. It's the people who live in the state of Minnesota. Maybe we'll get to a point and say, oh, well, here we go again. We got to change all those thoughts. Eventually that'll happen. But you do that with cultural sustainability. A head coach that sticks around for a very long time, wants to be there, wants to pour in that energy, and we have that now.
We're talking to Minnesota head football coach P.J. Fleck. Now, during camp, you had an event called Tattoo Story Night. Now, there was something special that happened with Brock Anikstad during the event. But before we get into that, what was the thinking behind Tattoo Story Night, and what were you hoping the players would get out of that?
Well, this is something we always do every single year during training camp. We do a lot of events to connect our players. And connect them not only to them being football players, but them being people. The closer football teams are usually the better football teams, and we got to get there fast. So one of the ways to get into young millennials' lives is not by just talking to them. You know, they'd rather be on their phone or their headsets. It's by talking to them about their tattoos. You know, most star players have tattoos, and you're most of the time not going to tattoo your body unless there's some type of story behind it, or some type of education behind it, or a very personal story. And so that's what we have. Tattoo Night is about an hour long. Every one of our players who volunteer to stand up in front of the room, talk about their tattoos. And it's amazing that even as a head coach, a person that recruits some of these student-athletes, knows their family inside and out, spends a year getting to know them, has no idea what these tattoos mean. And so what we did was we had Zach Anikstad, who's a true freshman walk-on quarterback, give a scholarship to his brother Brock by putting a big tattoo written in ink on the back of his back, and that said, "Hey Brock, you're on scholarship." And Zach doesn't have any tattoos at all, so it kind of created this like, "What, Zach got a tattoo?" And it created this kind of funny aspect beyond obviously then getting a scholarship. So tremendous, tremendous night. You learn so much about your players, and the players learn so much about themselves.
That's really cool. P.J. Fleck joining us. That is really cool. Now, as long as we're talking about the brothers, you named Zach the team's starting quarterback, and you described the quarterback battle this year as the hardest decision that you've had to make as a head coach. Zach is a true freshman and a walk-on, so what did you see in him that made you feel like he was the right guy for that job and to lead the team?
Well, both guys. You know, Zach Anikstad and Tanner Morgan, I think they're both capable of being the starting quarterback. You know, they both won the team. You know, it's all about winning the team. And I thought they both did that. It came down to a bunch of statistics, to be honest with you. You know, we value the football. We value explosive plays. And there was a few differences in the stats that were pretty drastic. And so that's how we decided to do it. It was very, very close. But I did want to pick a true starter this year. Last year, I kind of went back and forth, let them both play. Figured we'd just pick one for right now and see how it goes. But Tanner Morgan is very capable of getting in there and playing as well. We've got a very young football team, and those two are very young and inexperienced. But, you know, these young guys got to grow up. The one thing about freshmen is they don't stay freshmen very long. And we're very excited about the young talent we have in our program.
P.J. Fleck joins me for a few more moments. You know, it's been such a tough offseason for college football. And then in light of the situation in Maryland, there have been questions about the culture that is created in certain programs. So how do you want your players to see you and your coaching staff? For instance, do you want there to be a level of intimidation to develop toughness, or is that not at all what you want?
Well, we want to make a player very tough, but there's certain ways of doing that. We're very demanding, but we're demanding consistently in every part of their life, academically, athletically, socially, spiritually. You know, the 3 semesters we've been here, we have the highest GPA in the history of the football program. You know, that's never going to get you a job. It's never going to get you to keep your job. but that's a cultural that's a cultural aspect showing that our program is in really good shape and it's growing every single day. You know, we want our coaches to be very demanding, never demeaning, and we want our players to love coming to the facility. We want our coaches to have a great relationship with their players. I was told a long time ago, if your players are not doing it for you, you'll never get them to play their best. We want our players to play and do things for not only themselves, but our coaches. We want a very positive, energetic program that really celebrates the game of football, celebrates their 4 years, and creates the best moment and memories we possibly can, but also creating that demanding, tough aspect, which you can. You can have a balance of all that. It's just got to be done in a very, very respectful way. And the job of the players is to be able to prepare and perform. The job of the coaches is to teach and demand in all aspects of their life. And Jim Tressel told me this a long time ago, that they only care how much you know if they know how much you care. And that's a huge thing I've learned. That's what we'll continue to do. And we'll continue to love our players every single day. Just keep growing our players in every aspect.
He's entering his second season at Minnesota. Once again, they open up their season Thursday night against New Mexico State. That's a 7 p.m. Eastern start. P.J. Fleck, the head coach of the Gophers. P.J., great to get caught up. Always nice to have you on the show. Thank you for the time. Good luck this week. And I know we'll do it again soon.
We appreciate it, Jim. Roll the boat. Sky him out. Go Gophers.
Stabil wants you to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical then to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high impact area or not, planning in advance is a critical step in hurricane preparedness. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. I badly want to get off Urban Meyer and the train wreck that is Ohio State right now. And to my credit, I did make it to hour number three before actually getting into this. I want to get off it, but again, the guy won't let me. Because on Friday afternoon, he finally got around to apologizing to the first person that he should have said he was sorry to last week, Courtney Smith. So if you're looking for me to roll out with some sort of credit for finally doing the right thing, then you've got the wrong show and you've got the wrong host. I mean, I can't even muster a half-assed golf clap for this, because nothing he says or writes or tweets is going to erase the fact that he had an opportunity to make something that was terribly wrong right. He had an opportunity to lead from the front and send the right message. He had the opportunity last Wednesday at that disaster presser that he took part in. And even when it became clear that he felt like he was the victim and not the woman who was actually battered and bruised by his employee, this guy still had a chance to make it right. Even when he showed up that day and thought that he was the victim, he still had one last chance to make it right when he was asked directly about Courtney Smith towards the end of that presser. And instead of making it right, he puked all over himself.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation. And I'm just sorry we're in this situation.
One of the worst answers ever. One of the worst answers ever. Yeah, he's sorry. He's sorry, but not that the wife of one of his coaches was being terrorized and beaten, allegedly. He knew about that. He still did nothing about that. In fact, he started to delete text messages in an attempt to cover what he knew about that. He was sorry, but not for Courtney Smith. He was sorry he was suspended for 3 games. Never mind that he could have been fired for what he did, and pretty much anybody else would have been. He got the red ass because he had to sit out those 3 games. I mean, this hypocrite is unbelievable. So no credit to Herb for rolling out on Twitter on Friday with a screenshot of an apology to Courtney Smith. I mean, how weak, how pathetic that it took until Friday to get around to actually apologizing to Courtney Smith, if you want to call it that. What the hell were you doing on Thursday, Herb? And never mind what were you doing on Wednesday at the press conference. What were you doing Thursday when you had a night to sleep on that horrific performance? I know you weren't coaching. I know that. Take it from somebody who's worked in the media for 30 years. If you want something to die on a vine, drop it on a Friday afternoon. It is the oldest PR trick in the book. There's actually a name for it. It's called a news dump. Specifically designed for the weekend to swallow up and digest before Monday. In other words, too little, too late, Herb. The damage was already done. Lives had already been changed. And that Friday drop, that Friday dump, does not fix anything. You could have done something before it ever got to this point, and that news dump apology does not change anything. And to me, this is now this dude's legacy in my mind. So going forward, when I think of Urban Meyer, I'm not going to think about all the wins. I'm not going to think about the championships that he stacked. The first thing that I'm going to think of when I think of Herb is him having heart problems and memory loss whenever the bleep hit the fan. And the fact that whenever he had a chance to do the right thing, he did the wrong thing and tried to bully his way through it. I understand that time heals most wounds, especially for the dopes who don't think this guy did anything wrong in the first place, but not for me. When I see this guy, I'm going to see this guy for what he is, a liar and a hypocrite who put winning and the ships ahead of everything else, including domestic violence. That screenshot apology on Twitter on Friday changes nothing. In fact, it pretty much confirms my point. It reaffirms what I already think about this guy. At 4 Foxtrot tweets, Jim, I am a lifelong Buckeyes fan. I cannot be more embarrassed by Urban and that board of trustees. A bunch of gutless wonders. Hey, Foxtrot, if you are what you say you are, I respect that. I applaud that. You're not one of the sheep following in blindly and saying, come on, man, get off this guy's back. He didn't do anything wrong. Why did he even get 3 games? Because that's what he thinks. Did you see his whole attitude? The way he carried himself that presser? The funk that he was in? Somehow he thought that he had been done wrong. Somehow he thought he was the victim. Somehow he thought, why are they doing this to me? To me. And then Friday with that whack apology via screenshot on Twitter. A news dump. 1-800-636-8686. Believe me, the last thing I wanted to do was start this week by doing that yet again. But you apologize like that on a Friday? I want to make the point that you can't just dump something like that. There was no news dump. He tried. But because of that, it's going to jump the weekend. All right, then, let's go to the phones. I'm trying to give away the smoker. It may, in fact, go to Iray if I could figure out exactly where to send it. Let's go to Memphis. Dan in Memphis. Good to have you, Dan. How are you?
Jim, thanks so much for telling the truth, especially about Urban Meyer. What I haven't heard, at least I haven't heard it, is nobody speaking for Earl Bruce. Urban Meyer threw Urban Bruce, his mentor, under the bus. He kept saying that I did all this and I protected this guy and I've done all this because of my loyalty to Earl Bruce. Well, are you telling us, Urban, that Earl Bruce wanted you to cover up for an alleged wife beater? Are you telling me that he wanted you to lie? Are you telling me that he wanted to do all this stuff in his name? I'm sorry, but the Earl Bruce that I remember would want you to act like a man, Urban. And he'd want you to back that guy against the wall and say, don't you ever hit, don't you ever touch that woman again in anger. So, Urban, with everything else you've done one of the lowest things you can do besides protecting an alleged wife abuser. You threw your mentor under the bus. Think about that, Buckeye Nation. You're better than that. Thanks for being real, Jim.
Dan in Memphis, rack him. Appreciate that, Dan. Thanks so much. Yeah, he tried to say that, you know, part of this was because of my close relationship with Earl Bruce. And Zach Smith was his grandson, and I kind of looked the other way. I mean, such garbage. Such garbage. Herb, you've got it written. Your core values are written on the wall at the facility beneath Woody Hayes' name. Core values. Honesty and treating women with respect. Ross Tucker, NFL, Ross, thanks for hanging in there. So you mentioned what the guys are feeling like for week three. What about Sean McVay? In some cases, he's not playing his starters at all. What do you make of his approach?
You know, it's interesting too, Jim, because it's not just McVay. There's some other guys doing it. Matt Nagy didn't play any of the Bears starters in this last preseason game. So it seems like some of these younger, more new age guys are the guys more willing to just rest their guys. I don't have a problem with it, Jim, as long as you don't complain at all about the limited practice time, or you don't say at the start of the year, week one or two, well, we're rusty, we just got to work out some kinks. You don't have time to do that in the NFC. I mean, you look at the Falcons, the Eagles, the Vikings, the Packers, the Saints, certainly. I mean, if you are in the NFC, which, by the way, is why whether or not Wentz actually plays against the Falcons is a big deal, but you don't really have a game to waste or a game to get up to speed, especially in the NFC. I mean, maybe in the AFC, where it looks like the Patriots and the Steelers, the only two teams that we know for sure are going to be good. But in the NFC, I'm telling you, man, you can't afford to waste one game. So I'm good with it as long as you don't complain and as long as the guys aren't rusty that first time out.
He is the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. And again, follow him at Ross Tucker NFL, 7 years in the NFL. Ross, you mentioned Wentz. Doug Peterson got a little frustrated when he was asked repeatedly about the health of Carson Wentz. Their season opener is a week from Thursday. How do you see that playing out?
Jim, this is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen, because I live outside Philadelphia, and he was full go the first 3 days of camp, Jim. I mean, I watched him the second day of camp. There was some pressure. He avoided it. He sprinted to his right, avoided a guy, and then uncorked like the 60-yard bomb. It was beautiful. And we all said, okay, well, he's playing in the opener. It's July 26th, and he looks like he's totally ready to go. And then by the time I went to camp, like August 1st, they didn't have him practicing. You know, he was just doing the individuals. And then they let him do the 7-on-7 a little bit. So he must have suffered some kind of setback that they're not telling us, or they just got that freaked out when a guy fell down near his legs. Because it's bizarre to me that a guy can be out there and seemingly full go in July, and now 6 weeks later, it's sounding more and more like he's not going to play the opener. I mean, I had Dr. David Chow, the longtime Chargers team doc, on my podcast today, and he said there's no way he could possibly be 100% because it's a multi-ligament tear, not just the ACL, but the LCL. And he actually said to me today, Jim, he feels better right now medically in terms of how things are healed about Andrew Luck's shoulder than he does Carson Wentz's knee, which surprised me. And then my question is, okay, if he's not good enough for the opener, Jim, well, then is week two okay? Is week three okay? Like, then which one, when is the time to put him in? Because you can't afford to lose to the Falcons if you're going ahead and trying to get home field advantage or a bye later on in the year. That's a big opening game for both those teams.
Ross Tucker joining us. That's all really, really interesting. And look, I understand what Nick Foles did in the postseason. Has not looked great in the preseason, but I know what he did in the postseason. Ross, I got to get your thoughts also on Josh Allen. When you see what happened to him and the 5 sacks that he suffered against Cincinnati and how the offensive line in front of him has looked, do you think maybe you don't start him out of the gate? How would you handle that?
So this is one where I think compelling rational arguments can be made on both sides. If you asked me last week, I would have said, man, he's shown a lot of promise. He's a lot further along than I thought he'd be. I say just start him in the opener. There's going to be some lumps, but let him work through that. I think the Bills are kind of gearing up for 2019 and beyond anyway with a lot of their moves this offseason. So let him get the lumps out of his system now. That's how I felt, but then I'm with you, Jim. I watched that yesterday. He doesn't process that quickly yet. He doesn't get the ball out that quickly. And with that offensive line, which is in the running for among the worst in the NFL, and by the way, their receiving core is also in the running for among the worst in the NFL. That's a bad combination, especially when you look at who they play early in the season. I'm just worried that he's going to get bruised and battered mentally and physically if you put him out there. And I'm not so sure that Nathan Peterman, who's a really bright kid, doesn't have the physical tools, but gets the ball out quickly. I'm not sure he's not the better option early in the year, at least until the Bills can get this offensive line to settle down a little bit. I just don't want Allen to get beat up in every way and kind of, you know, I don't want to say be sabotaged, because, you know, the great ones, I guess, like the Peyton Mannings and the Aikmans, they found a way to fight through that early in their careers. I don't know if every guy is made of Hall of Fame stuff. I think you still could potentially be a salvageable franchise quarterback, but not be able to handle it after you get beat up and beat down early in your career.
Ross Tucker, my guest. All right, Ross, I got a few minutes, and hopefully we have time for this. You wrote a brilliant piece for The Athletic that had the headline, "I can tell you firsthand why changing the kickoff rule was necessary," end quote. Now, you played football for nearly 20 years, and you made the point the only time you were ever afraid for your safety was when you were on the kickoff team. So people can really appreciate this. Can you take us all through a kickoff moment by moment, start to finish? What exactly was that like?
Yeah, you know, part of it might have been, Jim, just because I didn't really do it in college, and then I didn't really do it my first couple years in the NFL, so it was just a little bit foreign to me. But there's something not natural, okay? Like, you know me, Jim, I love the violent aspect of the game. I'm going to write this week about how I was an idiot because I used my helmet all the time as a weapon. I mean, I used to headbutt. I had short arms, Jim, so I would headbutt dudes all the time just to get them to blink so I could then grab them. Looking back on it now, I feel like such a moron, but we didn't know that back then. So make sure you check out this week's story. But in terms of the kickoff, I'm not afraid of contact, but when you see a 240, 250-pound dude running like a 40-yard runny right at you, I don't care what anybody says. That is not natural. Like, that is like some gladiator stuff. And I remember specifically when I was on the wedge, they told you, Jim, whether it was a three-man wedge or a four-man wedge, they said you are not allowed to let anybody split you. But I would be in the meetings, Jim, for the kickoff team too, and they would say to the linebackers from Mississippi State and Baylor, your only job is to make sure you split the wedge.
Right.
So I'm in these meetings being like, What the heck is going on? Like, one of them can't be true. So I knew exactly what those guys' jobs were. And it was, I mean, it's why they got rid of the wedge, because they wanted to try to save guys' lives. And next, after I herniated a disc in my neck and ended my career in 07, and that's why they're even further fine-tuning the rules, getting rid of even the two-man double-team wedge, whatever you want to call it, and not letting these guys have as much of a runny. But it's scary, man. I mean, I distinctly wrote this in the story, Jim, in 04, I got laid out so bad by this Syracuse fullback named Keith Thump Belton that I got up and I wanted no parts of that guy ever again the rest of my life, but there was a flag for offside, and I was like, oh my gosh, just anything, don't make the same call. And our special teams coach, Bobby April, leans in and says, they'll never be expecting it again. Same thing.
Wow.
And I'm not kidding you, Jim. In that 10 seconds, I had some thoughts, man. Like, I thought about, like, starting to, like, wobble around and act like I was concussed and, like, fall down to the ground. Or I thought, all right, I'm just going to act like I'm going to try to hit this dude, but just whiff on purpose. Like, and I'm not a coward. I'm not, like, ask anybody I play with. They'll tell you I'm one of the meanest guys I ever played with. But after you just get totally annihilated like that and your helmet's 15 yards behind you on the Ford Field turf, you do not want to do that again. I don't care who are you. And finally, I just kind of bit my lip and put my mouthpiece in and thought, all right, I'm just going to hit this dude as low as I possibly can and see what happens. But, man, I was engaged. You know, you have a lot of thoughts go through your head in a real short amount of time.
Iray, how you living? And I mean that. How you living?
Romy, I'm not feeling over fine today, man. I'm beat up like Whitey. Big day of rock and roll yesterday. So I'm a little bit hungover, but that's okay because I got lots of bong hits, Norcos, and Holy Diver on 10. So it's all good.
Damn, Iray. All right, so despite all of that, you could actually get to a phone and make a phone call today. Did you call to let me know that, or is there something that you want to hit on before I respond to all that?
Oh, you know what, dude? I was listening Friday. You know, I started reading a little bit about this whole Urban Meyer debacle, man. And, I mean, why would anybody be shocked about this? You know, it's like, basically, sadly, it's pretty much a microcosm for our society today, man. I mean, basically, it's like win at all costs. And who suffers is the student athlete, of course, the only one that's disposable in this whole thing. And basically, you know, it's like the old cliche of it's not if you win or lose, it's how you play the game. It's as dead as Julius Caesar. And the only thing sadder than that is the you know, the blind devotion, the unconditional following of that sad program, dude. So it's nothing shocking to me anymore.
No, I agree with that. So, Irae, bring all of us up to date. What is your living situation and what is your plan for this week?
I don't want to talk about that, but I'm just kidding. It's all good, dude. I'm staying this week at the Marriott downtown Long Beach. So, Qualms, I have a place to live. You could stop browbeating me on Twitter and whatever else about being homeless because none of your crap is original, or a couple of them are kind of funny. And I realize the chunk I bit off when, you know, I brought that whole thing up, but, you know, c'est la vie, brother.
C'est la vie. All right, so is this a long-term solution or a short-term solution?
You know what, Romy? There's really no long-term solutions to anything because I really don't think that far down the line because life's too short. So it's all good for right now, and luckily I have a pillow underneath my throbbing head. And like I said, Ronnie James Dio on 10, so it's all good.
You got it. All right, thanks for the update.
Good night!